me to 2 Samuel chapter 19. We left off about at the end of verse 3, but I'm going to go back and read the first 3 verses and get a running start into verse 4 through 7. But we're at the point where Absalom has lost the battle and has been killed by Joab, David's general. And David is had told Joab and all the other people not to harm his son, if at all possible, take him alive. And Joab heard him. Joab chose not to follow what the king had said, because Joab seems to know what is best for David. And he's looking after David's best interest, even though it might not be what David wants. And, starting back in verse 1 again in chapter 19. It was told Joab, "Behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people, for the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son. And the people get them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud cry, 'O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son.' And Joab came into the house to the king and said, 'Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life, and the lives of thy sons and thy daughters, and the lives of thy wives, and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. Now therefore arise, go forth, and speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, thou will not tarry one with thee this night, and that will be the worst unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now.'" Joab's confronting David in a harsh manner because he understands what's going to happen if David don't pull himself together and act like a king. Here the nation, they've had a civil war, and the faction that was with David fought bravely against their brothers and sisters of Israel and won the battle. And now David is mourning over the victory, and he's causing just confusion. You know, what is going on here? Didn't the king ask us to go into battle and win a battle? Now he's mourning that we won the battle? So Joab can see David's support. He can envision it just falling apart because the people are confused. So Joab sort of grabs David by the collar and gives him a shake and says, "Listen here, king, this is what you're going to do. If you don't do this, you're going to lose your kingdom. You're not going to have any support. You're not going to have any support to the degree that you might lose your life. Somebody else might rise up, and you got no support when you've shamed those people that were behind you that went to the battle against their brothers and fought for you." Now, it wasn't so bad that David had those feelings, but it's how he acted on those feelings which was the problem. You know, we as Christians can mourn over things, but how do we act out our feelings is what's important. Are we causing somebody else to sin by the way we act? Maybe the feelings that we have may be natural and expected or whatever, but oftentimes we need to suppress our feelings for the better good of the body. In this case, you know, it makes sense that the king shouldn't be acting this way. And he's told to snap out of it. You know, he can have grief, but he's got excessive grief to the confusion of the people. Basically, he's being selfish. He's thinking of himself and his family relationships, putting him above his position as king, his responsibility as king of the nation.
Stills, also we need somebody in our life that can come and confront us when we do these type of things, to see what we're doing.
Verse 8. Then the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told unto all the people, saying, behold, the king doth sit in the gate. And all the people came before the king for Israel and fled every man to his tent. So the king goes and presents himself to the people sitting in the gate. It sort of takes character to be chewed out by somebody for something that you know you did wrong and just suck it up and fix it. That's sort of what King David did. When Joab chewed him out, David basically came to his senses then and started acting like a king. Now, sometimes it's hard to admit you're wrong and be humble and do what's right. But as we've said before, when David has been confronted with his sins, he repented. And that's one of, I think, the main thing that caused God to say he's a man after his own heart.
I think the most interesting thing here is the fact that Joab had the confidence to go and slap David around. I mean, because really, David could have had him killed for talking to him like that. You know? And the applications in our lives, as far as, you know,
you got to remember, though, Joab's family. So he can probably get away a little bit more than non-family can.
Well, I mean, that kind of plays into, I don't know if you've ever heard of relationship capital. Being a, you know, having put enough, because Joab has served David faithfully all the time.
Sure.
So he's put in the capital to be able to, you know, when we don't put in the time into a relationship with a person, then we don't have the ability to confront them on things that they're doing wrong. So Joab was in a unique position to be able to do that without too much fear of reprisal.
Yeah, Joab's lying for David. Joab's murdered for David.
I think he's got some capital there.
David's hitman.
Yep, that's right. Okay, verses 9 to 10. And all the people were at strife throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king saved us out of the hand of our enemies, and he delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines. Now he has fled out of the land for Absalom. And Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back? So the people that were behind Absalom saying, uh-oh, you know, we backed Absalom. He's dead now. We better rethink this. You know, we better bring David back. If we don't, we're probably in trouble if we don't show our support for David. So it's, I don't know, it's sort of awkward situation. It might be sort of like the United States after the Civil War. I don't know. But David has a job ahead of him to restore the kingdom, to put it back together, to recover from this civil war. And they are talking among themselves what they need to do. They think it's for their better good to now back David and bring him back since Absalom's gone. Verse 11, and King David said to Zadok and Abiathar the priests, saying, speak unto the elders of Judah, saying, why are ye the last to bring the king back to his house, seeing the speech of all Israel is come to the king, even to his house? Ye are my brothers, ye are my bones and my flesh, wherefore then are ye the last to bring back the king? And say ye to Amasa, art thou not of my bone and of my flesh? God do so to me, and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab. And he bowed the hearts of all the men of Judah, even as the heart of one man. So they sent this word unto the king, return thou and all thy servants. So David is basically chewing out the tribe of Judah. David is from a tribe of Judah. And the rest of the nations, they're saying, let's bring back King David. And King David said, okay, what about you, Judah? You know, I'm part of you. Where's your solicitation for me to come back and be your king, you know? Are you the last one to ask me? So he's sort of chewing out Judah because of that, because David don't want to go back and be the king of all of Israel if he don't have the support of all of Israel. And we saw that when he became the king to start with. You know, he was sort of the ruler of Judah, but until all the nations come together and said they wanted him as king, he wasn't the king of Israel. So now we got a similar thing here. David wasn't going to force his reign on Israel. He wanted to be asked back. And if you think about it, that's sort of the way Jesus Christ is, you know. If you look at Jesus Christ's ministry, anywhere he wasn't welcome, he didn't stay there, he left. He didn't argue with people, he didn't try to force himself on people or anything. If he wasn't welcome, he left. Now Jesus Christ wants us to ask him into a relationship with us. We're not going to be forced into it. Now, we may have to go through some things where we see the results of not being in a relationship with him, but we're not going to be forced to. So David's ready to come back, and he tells Amasa, who was the captain of Absalom's army, that he's going to make him the general of Israel's army together. What about Joab? Joab was a general. Joab was looking after the king's best interest. But David's ticked off at Joab. He killed Absalom when David told him not to, you know. So in the interest of unity among all the tribes and the kingdom and so forth, he's telling Amasa, I'll make you the general of the army. And maybe that'll put the rest of the tribes sort of at ease, because Amasa was the general of Absalom's army, even though he lost the battle. But David's looking at ways to bring the kingdom together. And he wanted his reception back as to be unanimous from all the tribes. Verse 15, so the king returned and came to Jordan. And Judah came to Gilgal to go to meet the king, to conduct the king over Jordan. And Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjaminite, which was of Bahurim, hastened and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. And there was 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons, and his 20 servants with him. And they went over Jordan before the king. And there went a ferry boat to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he came over the Jordan. Now look at all the people coming to welcome David back. He had chewed out Judah, so Judah decided, well, yeah, we better go welcome our king back. You got Shimei going over. I remember who Shimei was. He's a guy that was cursing the king, throwing stones at him, stuff like that when he was leaving Jerusalem. This guy's worried. This guy's worried. The king's coming back now. I supported Absalom. Absalom's gone. Well, he didn't really support Absalom. He was for Saul. But now the King David's coming back. You know, where's that put me and my family, you know? You know, oftentimes when a king in that day and age got ticked off at one person, the whole family got wiped out. So Shimei is concerned about his status before King David. Rightly so.
Yeshunia is the Benjamite. So how, during that many left those Saul's family?
Well, there wasn't a whole lot left. We'll find out later. He had several descendants left. But there wasn't a whole lot left. A lot of them were killed. But, yeah, he was, in a way, related to Saul. He's a Benjaminite. So we see Judah come to welcome David back. We see the tribe of Benjamin, which Saul was from, to come welcome David back. Where's the rest of them? It's going to cause a problem. Okay, Shimei, and said unto the king, let not my lord impute iniquity unto me, neither do thou remember that which thy servant did perversely the day that my lord the king went out of Jerusalem, that the king should take it to his heart. For thy servant doth know that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I am come the first this day of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord the king. But Abishai the king of Zeruiah answered and said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed? And David said, what have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah, that ye should this day be adversaries unto me? Shall there any man be put to death this day in Israel? For do not I know that I am this day king over Israel? Therefore the king said to Shimei, thou shalt not die. And the king swear unto him. David don't want to mess up his return to be king of Israel. If he starts killing people on his return, that's going to cause some problems. So he don't want anything to cause any problems with his return to Israel as a king. Shimei gets his just dues later. Over in the book of 1 Kings, Solomon had put Shimei under house arrest. He says, as long as you stay under house arrest, nothing's going to happen to you. But Shimei broke that house arrest and went somewhere, and it was told Solomon, and Solomon had him put to death. So eventually Shimei gets what's due him, but not now, not by David. So he's coming back escorted by thousands of people. Okay, verse 24. And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king, and had neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed to the day he came again in peace. And it came to pass, when he had come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, Wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? And he answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For my servant said, I will saddle me an ass, and I will ride thereon and go to the king, because thy servant is lame. And he has slandered my servant unto the lord the king. But my lord the king is an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet didst thou set thy servant among them. Thou did eat at thine own table. What right therefore have I yet to cry any more unto the king? And the king said unto him, why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, thou and Ziba divide the land. And Mephibosheth said unto the king, yea, let him take all, for as much as my lord the king has come again peace into his own house. So David is not, my impression is, David's not really sure who's telling the truth between Ziba and Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was a son of Saul that was lame. David looked for one of Saul's relatives to show his kindness to. Mephibosheth is brought into David's household. He ate at the king's table. He was given all of Saul's possessions. Ziba, his servant, was told to work the fields for Mephibosheth so he'd have income. when David left Jerusalem, Ziba deceived Mephibosheth in that he took a whole bunch of provisions to David and said that Mephibosheth was going to try to engineer a coup and take over, and that wasn't true. So at that time, David had given all the possessions to Ziba because he believed what Ziba had told him. But now another side of the story comes out. So now David says, okay, we'll just divide everything. Mephibosheth gets half, Ziba gets half. And Mephibosheth said, I don't want anything. Give it all to Ziba. I'm just glad you're back. So that gives a little bit more credibility to what Mephibosheth is saying. So anyway, David, for whatever reason, is not really taking care of any business right now. He probably doesn't want to soil the day that the king comes back to power by killing people and stuff like that. That might be part of it. It might be part of just indecisive right now with his age and stuff like that. He may be not as sharp as he used to be. I don't know. But it seems to me that this situation is not really resolved to me. That's what it seems like to me.
You're pretty sharp for your age. I mean, so that really can't be applicable.
You haven't heard what my wife says.
But they also say we mellow in our old age.
Well, that's probably part of it, too.
They could also be taking into Joab's reprisal and just keeping his, you know, just not making any decisions right now while he's in mourning about Absalom.
Yeah, possible, yeah. And he may be looking at anything that might be divisive for the nation, too. They don't want to do anything that might be divisive. If he starts killing off people, anytime you kill somebody, you know, you tick off somebody else. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's generally true.
So he's not wanting to start any problems that don't have to be started right now.
He might be trying to watch, too, to make sure that all the alliances are really, as they're, you know, coming forward saying that they are. He might not trust any of them. He's got to wait and see.
Yeah, I think that's
There's
part
a lot
of it, too.
In the air and people are all saying different things, you know.
Because, you know, the king don't always get the truth. You know, just in the army.
They turncoats anyway, you know. They was like, oh, yay, Absalom. Oh, Absalom's dead. Yay, David.
Yeah.
You know, just in the army, you know, things come up and say, like, we can't tell the general that. We'll tell him this other thing. You know, he don't need to know the truth. We'll tell him what he wants to hear. Those kind of things happen all the time in leadership.
Patronize them.
It happens in big business, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So David might not be sure he's getting the whole story on everything he's getting told here. Okay, verse 31. And Barzillai, the Gileadite, came down from Rogalim and went over Jordan with King to conduct him over Jordan. Now, Barzillai was a very aged man, even 80 years old, and he had provided the king of substance while he lay at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man. And the king said unto Barzillai, come thou over with me, and I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem. And Barzillai said unto the king, how long have I to live that I should go with the king into Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old, and can I discern between good and evil? Can thy servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any more the voice of singing men and singing women? Wherefore then should thy servant be with ye? Yet a burden unto thy lord, my lord the king. My servant will go a little way over Jordan with the king, and why should the king recompense at me such a reward? Let my servant, I pray thee, turn back again, that I may die in mine own city and be buried by the grave of my father and of my mother. But behold, thy servant, Kimham, let him go over with my lord the king and do to him what shall seem good unto thee. And the king answered, Kimham shall go over with me, and I will do to him what shall seem good to thee. and whatsoever thou shalt require of me, that I will do for thee. And all the people went over Jordan. When the king had come over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him and returned to his own place. So we have this 80-year-old guy that provided for David while he's in exile. He's a very well-off guy and gave David everything he needed. And David wanted to show his appreciation for what he had done for David by taking him back to Jerusalem and putting him in a position of honor and so forth. The guy said, I'm 80 years old. I don't care anymore. You know, I just want to be home. I want to die at home. You know, just let me do what I want to do, die at home. But take my son with you. You know, he's not seen Jerusalem. He don't know all the honor and prestige that's around the king and stuff like that. Teach him some things, you know. Let him see how your court works and so forth. So David's okay. I'll take your son with me. So they both decide to let the son go instead of the old man. So the old man goes back home to finish out his years and let his son get an education in a royal court. You know, it's sort of like somebody getting an opportunity to be, say, a page or something like that in the Senate to see how things really work, or
shadow somebody.
Yeah. Or an opportunity to be a page in a White House or something like that to see how things work and stuff. Okay, verse 40. Then the king went on to Gilgal, and Kimham went on with him with all the people of Judah, conducted the king and also half the people of Israel. And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said unto the king, why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away and have brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over the Jordan? And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, behold, the king is near of kin to us. Wherefore then be ye angry for this matter? Have we eaten all the king's cost, or hath he given us any gift? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 parts in the king, and we have also more right in David than ye. Why then did ye despise us, and our service should not advice should not be first in bringing back our king? And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. So, fighting over the king now. The nation was divided over King David. You know, the bulk of them was behind Absalom. And now they're fighting over King David, who's going to get the most favor for King David. So Judah and Benjamin went to bring him back over the river. You know, David's kinfolks, Judah, Saul's kinfolks, Benjamin, and the other 10 tribes, they're jealous because they think these two tribes are trying to get the most favor from the king. So it's causing problems.
They're so fickle.
Yeah. But we're that way.
Jealous siblings.
Yeah, we're that way. Yeah.
Who's been more loyal to King David?
Well, I mean, Judah, Absalom was from Judah too. So they were divided also. So the whole nation of Israel had factions in every tribe that was against David. But now, there seems to be a faction between Judah and Benjamin and the other 10 tribes fighting over King David. They all want the king now. Before, most of them wanted to get rid of the king and go with Absalom. Now they don't want the king back. Politics are just fickle.
Well, it also might come across as the northern tribes were hesitant for the king to come back. Because they didn't participate in bringing him back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's so obvious is we haven't changed a bit since the days of David to now.
No.
We're still the same way.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah. Human nature hasn't changed from the beginning. And it's caused problems. Chapter 20. Got a rebellion going. And there happened to be there a man of Belial, whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjaminite. And he blew a trumpet and said, "We have no part in David, neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel." So every man of Israel went up from after David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah clave unto their king from Jordan even to Jerusalem. So we got a rebel faction now. A guy's seeing an opportunity. There's chaos in the nation. There's division. There's factions and so forth. And this guy, Sheba, says, "I'll take advantage of this chaotic time." And he sends a notice throughout Israel, blew the trumpet, and calling an army to gather behind him. So look, we're looking at possibly another civil war with Israel. Another civil war. Now, before we went into the book of Samuel and talking about King David and all that kind of stuff, I forgot about all this chaos going on during the time David was king. But he had lots of trouble in his kingdom. Lots of trouble in his kingdom. A lot of that trouble stemmed from David's sins. Not being the kind of king he's supposed to be. With sins with Bathsheba, his sins with having multiplying wives and horses and all that kind of stuff, going against the guidance that God had given in the Old Testament. So David had a lot of trouble, civil war kind of trouble among his people. And now you got Sheba rising up. In verse 3, "And David came to his house at Jerusalem, and the king took the 10 women, his concubines, whom he had left to keep the house, and put them in ward, and fed them, but went not in unto them. So they were shut up until the day of their death, living in widowhood." Now that seems, in a way that seems bad, but he'd left the 10 concubines behind to take care of all the stuff he left in the palace. And if you recall, Absalom had went into his father's concubines to make sure there's no possibility of reconciliation with his father. He did that on the advice of Ahithophel, David's previous advisor. So now when David comes back, even though they were property of King David, they had been defiled by Absalom, so David couldn't have the same kind of relationship with them that he did before. If it had been any other king, he might have had them put to death, but not David, King David. He saw that they were provided for the rest of their life. To us, that might seem bad, but the way it was looked at in that day and age, David was being kind to them and taking care of them. Verse 4. "And then the king said to Amasa, 'Assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present.' So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed him." Not a good thing. He made Amasa general of his army, gave his first order to Amasa, and Amasa didn't meet the standards. He said, "Be back in 3 days with the army assembled." He didn't make it. Didn't do it. So already, David's having problems here. Did he not gather the army together because he was incompetent? Or because he wasn't that supportive of David? Or because the people didn't want to support David? Don't know. But he's not accomplishing his task that the king has given him. Verse 6. "And David said to Abishai, 'Now shall Sheba the son of Bichri come do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou thy Lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get him fenced cities and escape us.' And there went out after him Joab's men, the Cherethites and the Pelethites, and all the mighty men that went out of Jerusalem to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. David got worried. Amasa's not back with the army. I told him to assemble. So what David do? He gets a hold of Abishai and says, take all my palace guards. These were all the people that was protecting David. David is leaving himself vulnerable now, but he knows that he can't let Sheba's army form and get support. So he says, take the palace guards, Abishai. Take my palace guards. I don't know where Amasa is, but take my palace guards and go take care of Sheba. That's how serious David thought the problem was. He wanted to nip it in the bud. He didn't want that rebellion to grow any. And Amasa's, I don't know where he is, you know. David's worried. Did Amasa defect? I don't know. Hadn't heard from him. So he's David, to his credit, he's taking action now, the best he knows how, to stop this rebellion. Now remember, Joab was the field commander of the troops, but now he's looked like he's putting Abishai over Joab. Okay, verse 8. And when they were in the great stone, which is in Gibeon, Amasa went before them, and Joab's garment that he had put on was girded unto him. Upon it was a girdle with a sword fastened upon his loins and the sheath thereof. As he went forth, it fell out. And Joab said, Amasa, art thou in health, my brother? And Joab took Amasa by the beard with the right hand to kiss him. But Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand. So he smote him therewith in the fifth rib, and shed out his bowels to the ground, and struck him not again, and he died. So Joab and Abishai's brother pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. Joab's a ruthless guy. He's a ruthless guy. He doesn't appreciate Amasa being given the title general over Israel's army. Joab feels like that's his position. So when Amasa, he's probably just incompetent. After he did gather the army together, it took longer than 3 days, but he gathered the army together, he found out that Abishai and Joab had already went to chase Sheba. So he caught up with them, with his army. So Amasa's trying to do the right thing, even though he wasn't doing it to the standard David told him to do. He didn't gather an army in 3 days. It took him 4 or 5 days. I don't know. But anyway, when he did get the army together, he went to help out Abishai and Joab. Joab ain't going to have any of that. Joab arranged his weapon, his sword or whatever, in such a manner that it wouldn't appear as if he was drawing his sword when he is approaching Amasa. And he sort of, and it was common that day, you know, guys wore beards and stuff. You grab a guy's beard and pull him and give him a kiss by holding his beard, sign of friendship. Different custom. I mean, maybe a beard sort of like Dan's, you know, where you can grab a hold of it. So he grabs a hold of his beard, and at the same time he sort of leans over, and his dagger or something slides out of the sheath, and he catches it. Okay, Amasa probably don't give a second thought of it, because he might think it's a natural reaction. You know, if you try to drop something, try to catch it. So he bends over, it slides out, he tries to catch it, and just stabs it. So he had it all planned out to where Amasa wouldn't be suspicious of what was going on, that he could draw his weapon without causing alarm in Amasa, to where he'd have the drop on him to kill him. And he did. Joab's a ruthless guy. Verse 11, one of Joab's men stood by him and said, He that favoreth Joab, he that is for David, let him go after Joab. And Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth over him when he saw that everyone that came by stood still. And when he was removed out of the highway, all the people went after Joab to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. And he went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel, to Beth Makkah, and all the Berites, and they were gathered together and went also after him. So when he stabbed Amasa, he didn't kill him. He's still writhing in his blood there in the middle of the road. Only thing they did for him is pull him out of the road so people wouldn't stop to stare at him. They were just going to let him die. Didn't even finish him off. Just let him bleed to death there. Joab didn't care. Abishai didn't care. In a way, it was a message to everybody else that saw him that you better get behind Joab. Better support Joab. You know, he's a ruthless guy. He's the kind of leader we need in the army. That's the message you're trying to give everybody.
That's like a precursor to ISIS there.
In a way. Getting a little warm in here.
Okay, verse 15. And it came and seized him in Abel, that's the city's name, Abel, of Beth Makkah. And they cast up a bank against the city, and it stood in a trench. And all the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. Then cried a wise woman out of the city, "Hear, hear, say, I pray you," unto Joab, "Come near hither, I may speak with thee." And when he came near unto her, the woman said, "Art thou Joab?" He answered, "I am he." And she said unto him, "Hear the words of thine handmaiden." And he answered, "I do hear." Then she spake, saying, "They that want to speak in old time, saying, they shall surely ask counsel at Abel." And so they ended the matter. "I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city, a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of the Lord?" And Joab answered and said, "Far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so, but a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba, son of Bichri by name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city." And the woman said to Joab, "Behold, his head shall be thrown to thee over the wall." Then the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and cast it out to Joab. He blew a trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent. And Joab returned to Jerusalem and to the king. They fled into this walled city named Abel. And this old woman gets up on the wall and talking to Joab, says, "Okay, Joab, we don't want you to destroy our city. What do you want?" Well, he wants Sheba. She goes, "Okay, we'll throw his head over the wall. Just wait a little while." So you go back and talk to the people. The woman made sense, you know. You know, women can be pretty persuasive sometimes, you know. Goes back and talk to the people. After a while, poof, there comes the head over the wall. So Joab says, "Okay, mission complete. Let's go home." That's all it is to it, you know. If you're going to be a rebellious person, make sure you got some support and don't flee to the wrong city. You know,
The woman got it done.
The woman got it done. Yeah, they thought more of their city than they thought of Sheba's rebellion. You know, if we can give up one person, we'll give up that one person. Just don't, you know, destroy our city. Let's read the last few verses here. Now Joab was over all the hosts of Israel, Benai, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites, over the Pelethites, that's David's palace guards. And Adoram was over the tribute, and Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder, and Sheba was scribe, and Zadok and Abithar were the priest, and Ira also, the Jerite, was a chief ruler about David. All this is saying here is David was administrator, and he organized his staff to take care of all the business that needed to be taken care of in the kingdom. So David's trying to provide stability for Israel and put all the people and the officers that need to be taken care of all the business. And we'll pick up in chapter 21.
I was going to say, the reason I was late, I was already running 10 minutes late, but I was actually ended up being actually 20 minutes late because it was a real bad accident. Y'all heard all the sirens going by, ambulances and fire trucks. I mean, it was a real bad accident there at the end of Gillis Hill and where it meets Lindsay. And it looks like somebody just T-boned somebody real bad. I mean, so pray that they're okay.
Close with the word of prayer. Gracious Heavenly Father, we pray for these that were in accident, Lord, that you'll watch over them and take care of them. Now as we go in your sanctuary, we pray that all our words and deeds and songs of praise will be pleasing in thy sight. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.